June 25th, Christian in Sports. Today's podcast on families focuses on an aspect found in many of our families' lives, sports. Through sports, many Christians have found ways to let their lights shine so that God may be glorified. Christians can show the way to proper behavior at sporting events, whether as an athlete, coach, parent, spectator, or even an official. Join Kevin Rutherford as he discusses how to maintain a good influence.
When Christians become involved in sports as players, parents, fans, coaches, or officials, they can show the world a better way. They're given a unique and tremendous opportunity to let their light shine before the world. Jesus said, "You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It is then good for nothing but to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven." Matthew chapter 5, verses 13 to 16. Paul wrote, "Do all things without complaining and disputing, that you may become blameless and harmless, children of God without fault in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world." Philippians chapter 2, verses 14 to 15. Christians who are involved in sports must behave like Christians. Our faith is not a small part of who we are on Sunday morning. We're Christians every hour of every day. Christ is not a fragment of our lives, but rather He is our life. Colossians chapter 3, verses 1 to 4. Our lives are not conformed to the world, but transformed by the renewing of our minds. Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. While sports may provide some of the strongest temptations in our lives, it may also give us some of the best opportunities to show the world how true Christians behave. Heartbeats race. Tensions rise. Emotions fight for control. Not for the athletes, but for the fans. The fans of youth sports are the parents, and the parents can really lose their minds when it comes to the athletic competitions of their children. I've been involved in sports as a player, coach, and parent. I understand how exciting and emotional being a parent of an athlete can be. I also know I have a God-given responsibility to keep that emotion under control. James wrote, "So then, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. For the wrath of man does not produce the righteousness of God." James chapter 1, verses 19 and 20. In the same context, James also said, "If anyone among you thinks he is religious and does not bridle his tongue, but deceives his own heart, this one's religion is useless or vain." James chapter 1 and verse 26. As a player, I loved the intensity of competition. I enjoyed the conflict, the mental focus, and the energized physical activity. But sporting events mean something very different now that I'm watching my own children compete. My daughter competed in figure skating competitions when a teenager. She wore modest clothes, by the way. That kind of competition had its own stress points for parents. I found myself constantly thinking in my mind, "Don't fall." I've seen all three of my children compete in bowling leagues. I want them to do well and enjoy seeing their teams win. But those sporting events did not challenge me as a parent in the way my son's basketball has. Basketball is one of those very active, extremely fast, and sometimes tremendously intense sports that pits players in a heated battle against their opponents. It is a battle that involves the mind, emotions, and the body. I've seen other players take cheap shots at my son. I've disagreed, in my mind, not out loud, with referees. I've wondered what the coaches are thinking at times, and I've faced the tension that comes from watching your own children compete in sports. Yet, in all of this, I know I must still behave as a Christian. I must have the Christian decency to keep my mouth shut when I get upset. I know I must keep my mouth shut when I'm not sure an official made the right call. I realize I need to remember that these other players have parents who love them too, and I know officials and coaches are usually doing the best they can. I also need to remember that it is possible for someone else to see something better than I did and to understand more than I do. In fact, it is likely. That's why I quietly operate the video camera for the team. The thoughts and emotions are all there inside my head, but I keep my mouth shut. Most of the action in a basketball game occurs very quickly. At that speed, it is nearly impossible to see everything that happens. What I've often found is that I have one impression of a game that occurs when I watch it live, but when I later watch the video and have more time to think about what is happening, the impression is often different. Take this as a warning. When fans open their big mouths, they are often spouting out all manner of ignorance and foolishness. Cheer loudly if you want, but don't be critical and don't be obnoxious. Surely bitter, critical, and malicious screaming during a game is not becoming of any Christian. Have you ever noticed how most parents seem to think they're experts in the sport their child plays? Each parent has an opinion, a philosophy, and in their minds, some sort of superior knowledge. Christian parents, who are full of themselves, need a good dose of humility and perspective. I learned this to some degree when I was coaching. I coached league basketball for middle school and junior high teams. The organizer of the league often said, "The only thing wrong with youth sports these days is the parents." I think she was onto something. I found it possible to coach as a Christian, treat the players with respect, be fair to all the players, and win games. But it was never possible to do all of that and please the parents. So I determined to do all of those things except try to please the parents. I sent letters home to the parents telling them what I expected of their behavior as well as that of the players. During one season, the behavior was getting out of control among a few parents, so I sent letters home again dealing with that issue. During one of the games I was coaching, the organizer of the league had to come out and stop the game because the behavior of the parents in the stands was so bad. She gave the parents a good lecture and threatened them with expulsion from the gym. I found out very quickly that one of the key lessons I needed to teach my players was to ignore the stands. Don't listen to the stands. I told them over and over again they needed to listen to the coach and to the officials, but no one else during the game. My son and I traveled 2.5 hours north to a west central Illinois town for a basketball tournament. His team didn't completely play up to their potential, but they did well enough to come away with a third-place trophy. After their win in the consolation game, I lingered behind packing up my camera equipment. The two volunteer officials who had kept the books were also still there, finalizing all their records. It was then that a balding, middle-aged father from the home team sponsoring the tournament came over and began to talk to one of the book officials. He apparently knew her from some time in their past. He spoke politely and friendly to her before saying goodbye and turning to leave. He took a few steps away, then spun around and came back to speak to the volunteer official again. At that point, he began to say terrible things about the behavior and character of our team during games. It became clear his comments were actually directed at me, though he was speaking to the official. The official made no response, and the small, bitter man walked away. At the time, I told the official he must have us mixed up with someone else. But later, I found out he was still sore about our team having beaten his son's team a month earlier. This poor man was holding a terrible grudge he just could not let go. Initially, I was a little upset about his comments. For a moment, I considered confronting him, but that would have been the wrong thing to do. I left him alone and determined that if I were to have a future encounter with this man, I would do my best to be as polite as I possibly could and show him the utmost in kindness. Maybe that would help, maybe not. But behaving in the right way toward bitter parents helps me, and it is the right thing to do. Jesus stated, "You've heard that it was said, 'You shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy.' But I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, Do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you, that you may be sons of your Father in heaven. For He makes His sun rise on the evil and on the good, and sends rain on the just and on the unjust. For if you love those who love you, what reward have you? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet your brethren only, what do you do more than others? Do not even the tax collectors do so? Therefore you shall be perfect, just as your Father in heaven is perfect. Matthew chapter 5, verses 43 to 48. Parents often lose their minds at their kids' sporting events. So let's talk about some specific problems for Christian parents of players to avoid. It seems obvious to me that there are problems with youth sports. I've played them, I've coached them, I've watched my kids play them. Clearly, I'm not saying sports are inherently evil. Yet to ignore the problems with youth sports is to almost guarantee your kids will get hurt spiritually and emotionally. Dr. Shane Murphy wrote, "While we have recently come to realize that some professional athletes have serious problems, we have been much slower to recognize the problems that had developed in youth sports." Shane Murphy is a sports psychologist who has written about some of the reasons behind parents getting too caught up in their children's competition. Murphy wrote, "It is that the strong emotions aroused by seeing their child locked in a competitive struggle with others lures parents into acting in ways that end up hurting their children or their relationship with their children." In his article entitled, "Dark Side of Youth Sports," he says there is a great deal of narcissistic appeal in sports competition. Parents who fall into this trap begin to act impulsively, letting their emotions get the better of them, and are often viewed by others as acting like children rather than adults. Dr. Murphy also said, "Parents who lack the skills to cope with the powerful emotions of ego gratification triggered in them by watching their child compete are those most strongly affected by participation in youth sports programs. They are the individuals who come to be viewed by others as out of control, but who believe that they are doing what is best for their child." I'm sure you've known people that fit the description just given. Perhaps you've also had some of the same problems. Be honest with yourself. Maybe you are the one who thinks they are doing what is best for the child, but everyone else thinks you're obnoxious and your child is embarrassed. While coaching basketball, I saw a mother of a player from an opposing team march up and down the sidelines, barking out orders to her son and to the others on the team. I was just glad her kid wasn't one of my players. I saw parents often interfere with the games, with the coaches, the officials, and sometimes the athletes. I even saw one very tall man follow an 8-year-old through the crowd after a game while telling the child off, and the child wasn't even his. He was angry because this other child had scored so many more points than his own. I've seen parents jump out onto the court and curse referees, players, and coaches. Clearly, there's something wrong with a society that produces parents who abuse and embarrass children in the name of athletics. In the book, Why Johnny Hates Sports, Fred Ng writes, 30 years ago, parents got excited watching their children participate in sports too. But today, that level of excitement is often transformed into abusive and mean-spirited behavior. There are still many parents who treat the game with respect and promote good sportsmanship, but there are also too many who operate in their dysfunctional world of insults, violence, ill manners, and downright obnoxious behavior where winning is all that really matters. These are the parents yelling at their children, barking instructions at teammates, criticizing coaches, arguing with parents of the opposition, and insulting officials who make a call against their child's team. Violence among the parents seems to be a growing problem. What is disturbing about the violent behavior we see on the sidelines and in the stands is that it takes place outside the game. Once again, these parents are out of control, behaving in blind response to feelings of anger and frustration generated by watching youth sports. The authors of the book, Whose Game Is It Anyway?, state, "Though sports form an integral part of Western culture, especially in North America, parents have seen children sidelined by unhappiness, adults overcome with rage, and an increase in emotional turmoil, loss of control, and bad, even tragically violent behavior related to kids in competitive sports. For example, on a July day in 2000, at a suburban hockey rink outside of Boston, two fathers exchanged words following some rough play among 9 and 10-year-old boys. Words became shoves, pushes, and then punches. A simple argument set off by one father's concern that another father, ostensibly in charge, had allowed play to become too rough, ended when the bigger man beat the coach to death. Examples of this kind of disturbing behavior are everywhere. During a Pennsylvania youth football game, police were called to a fight that involved around 50 parents and some of the kids. A dad in Florida broke an umpire's jaw while being ejected from the game. In his book, Just Let the Kids Play, Bob Bigelow writes, "The problems are worse than you may realize. I have a friend whose computer search service alerts him to almost every item that appears in any newspaper or magazine around the country about parents' misbehavior and violence at their children's games. My friend receives, on average, more than a story a day, all reports of adults gone over the top." In the same book, Bigelow says, "There is a disconnect between what adults say versus what children want and need to hear. What adults want and need from youth sports is not often what children want and need. It's as though the adults and the children live in different worlds and speak different languages." More dramatic and disturbing examples of how far adults stray from their proper roles in youth sports occur every day, from assaults on coaches and officials to brawls among parents, even a fatal fight between two fathers. What I've noticed, along with many other authors, is that the ego of the parents is what often drives bad behavior among adults in youth sports. Mark Hyman's book, Until It Hurts, America's Obsession with Youth Sports and How It Harms Our Kids, addresses this issue with the following statement. "As grown-ups, we talk a good game about what we expect from youth sports for ourselves and for our children. If our kids make friends, have fun, and pick up a few skills from their sport, it's been a good season for them and us. The reality is often more complicated. Adults rely on youth sports to feed an array of our emotional needs. The frustrated jocks among us long to see our progeny succeed where we never could. There's the affirmation that is attached to raising a namesake who is a standout player. If a child is the most gifted athlete on the block, it stands to reason she was raised by the most gifted parents." Michael Kohler, Ph.D., says, "Many parents today not only watch sporting spectacles, they are sporting spectacles. They simply don't understand what youth sports are all about. Many are more interested in satisfying their own misguided need for recognition than helping their children enjoy their athletic experiences and learn from them." Mark Hyman writes about Joey Jay, who was the first baseball player to graduate from Little League Baseball and make his way into major leagues. In 1961, he was leading the Cincinnati Reds to the National League pennant when he began to notice his wife and son were not happy with his son's youth baseball. When Joey Jay looked further into it, he found the following things were wrong with youth baseball. Number one, as he put it, idiotic fathers who saw having a son as a star of a Little League squad a new status symbol not far below a Cadillac convertible. Number two, mothers caught up in the Little League status race. Number three, coaches who were frustrated athletes determined to recreate their own dreams of vanished glory. I think Joey Jay was exactly right in his assessment of the situation, and I believe it has only gotten worse since 1961. Raising children can be very rewarding, but it is also extremely complicated. Raising children involves loving, disciplining, teaching, training, and preparing them for adulthood. Ultimately, we want our children to become responsible and mature individuals who are capable of fulfilling their God-given roles in their own homes someday. Preparing them for work with proper education is important. Providing opportunities for physical growth and development through sports can be helpful. But let's never forget that being a great student and athlete who becomes financially successful is of no value if that same person loses their soul. Mark chapter 8, verses 36 to 38. Your number one purpose as a parent is to raise godly children. Malachi chapter 2 and verse 15. Paul said, "And you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord." Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4. If you will continue to place the eternal destiny of your child's soul above all else, you should be able to enjoy your child's athletic efforts even while keeping sports in perspective. Just remember why we are here on this earth. Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verses 13 and 14. Our whole purpose is to serve God and prepare for heaven. Being a professional athlete who is, for a brief moment, the most famous person in the world might be nice. But in reality, it means nothing if that same sports figure dies while unprepared to meet God. Luke chapter 16, verses 19 to 31. Another important principle parents must remember is to be respectful of those who are in authority. Be respectful of the coaches. Be assured they are most likely going to be doing the best they can to achieve success with the team. They already have plenty of pressure on them without having parents interfere and add pressure. Respect the fact that the coach is the coach and you're not. Obviously, respecting authority extends to the officials as well. There may be a few times when officials are lazy or biased, but in the vast majority of cases, they too are doing the best they can. In some ways, officials have the hardest job in sports. The least we can do is give them our respect. Games would be a chaotic waste of time without officials. The Bible clearly teaches us to respect the authority of government officials and law enforcement officials in Romans chapter 13, 1-7. But I believe the same principles of respect for authority apply to sports officials as well. Peter spoke of those who walk according to the flesh in the lust of uncleanness and despise authority. They are presumptuous, self-willed. They're not afraid to speak evil of dignitaries. 2 Peter 2 and verse 10. I realize this was not written with a direct reference to referees and umpires, but the principle is important. There are many parents who are presumptuous and self-willed and consequently show no respect for those who are in authority. Christian parents need to show the way in this regard. Let us be those who keep our mouths shut when we think the official made a mistake. Let us learn to show respect to and be an encourager of the coach, even if we think he made a few bad decisions. Just remember, there's a very good possibility the coach or official is right, and you are the one that is wrong. The biblical commands regarding how we talk go alongside our discussion of our respect for authority. But whether you're complaining about a coach, a player, or just whining about a play, you need to be careful what you say. In fact, try not complaining at all, Philippians 2:14. But no matter what you're talking about, watch your tongue, Ephesians 5 and verse 4. Remember to let your speech always be with grace, Colossians chapter 4 and verse 6. You have an obligation as a Christian to exercise self-discipline over your tongue. The Christian should be the last person in the stands speaking bitterly, rudely, or harshly. I realize it is hard to guard your mouth when your child is involved in an intense competition. In fact, the more intense the game, the harder it becomes to watch the tongue. James said, "For we all stumble in many things. If anyone does not stumble in word, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole body. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. But no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison. With it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceed blessings and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so." James chapter 3, verses 1 through 12. Just because it is impossible to completely tame the tongue does not mean that parents shouldn't try. In a moment of carelessness, a parent could say something that impacts their child with the wrong attitude. In that same moment, a careless word could ignite a fire of fury in parents from the other team. Parents should cheer in positive ways and be very careful what they say during a game. Sometimes parents place too much pressure on their children. The parents may at times have expectations that are unrealistic. Then when the children don't reach the athletic expectations, the parents are upset. This is wrong on so many levels and will hurt the children in so many different ways. Paul wrote, "Fathers, do not provoke your children, lest they become discouraged." Colossians chapter 3 and verse 21. We all know that if we spoil our children and don't push them enough, they will fail. However, we also need to be aware of the fact that pushing our children too hard in any area of child rearing will also hurt them. There's a fine line in there. There's a balance that Christian parents must work to achieve. Sometimes Christians do very well with this until a sport is involved. I've seen very good parents lose their minds during athletic competitions. They yell and scream and coach their kids from the sidelines. Before and after the game, they drill them with questions and drive them excessively. Typically, the kids become discouraged. I've known situations where a child will perform well when the father is not around, but fall apart when dad is there yelling at him from the sidelines. Too many times, dads and moms need to back away from the pressure and look for ways to genuinely compliment the child. Instead of being a harsh critic of our kids' performance, why not ask them what they thought of the game, and particularly what they thought of their own performance? Many kids will be able to accurately critique their own performance. Typically, the coach has already assessed what went right and what didn't. I'm not saying some constructive advice is never needed. I am saying that destructive, harsh criticism is never helpful. Parents must remember that their goal is to raise the child to love God and go to heaven. Parents must also remember that their relationship with their children is always more important than the result of any game. So bite your lip, bite your tongue, grit your teeth, smile, be encouraging, and be very careful what you say. I've been blessed with the privilege of being able to attend some very exciting sporting events as a fan. When I lived in Memphis, I was able to go to a University of Memphis Tigers football game. Living in Minnesota gave me a couple of opportunities to see the Vikings play. One of those was a playoff game against the Cleveland Browns. When Chris Carter came running out on the field, the crowd erupted with loud, roaring cheers. The noise was incredible. We also were able to attend some Timberwolves NBA games. We always bought the cheapest tickets, and that meant we had to sit in the nosebleed section. But we took our binoculars with us and had a great time. While living in Duluth, we had a lot of fun attending the University of Minnesota Duluth Bulldogs hockey games in the winter and minor league baseball games in the summer with the Duluth Dukes. On one occasion, my oldest daughter, 5 years old at the time, was allowed on the field with her T-ball team and the Duluth Dukes. She stood out on the field with a player during the national anthem. I remember as she ran out onto the field, she kept crisscrossing in front of the Duke player she was with. My wife and I were afraid she was going to trip him up out there on the field in front of everyone. Since we've lived in Missouri, I've enjoyed some indoor soccer, an NBA exhibition game, a St. Louis Rams preseason game, and a St. Louis Rams playoff game. By the way, I didn't miss church services for it either, in case you're wondering. One of the deacons from church had gotten some tickets through his work and had asked me to go with him to the playoff game against the Green Bay Packers. The game had just gotten started when we walked into the domed stadium. I could hear the noise of the crowd from outside the stadium, but when we walked inside, the noise was incredible. Nothing prepared me for the intensity of the all-encompassing, all-surrounding roar from inside. The experience of an NFL playoff game is incredible. However, I do believe I enjoy regular season St. Louis Cardinals games more. I can't afford to buy tickets too often, but I've had occasion to take the family once, and then others have kindly given me tickets they received at work. Perhaps all professional baseball games are like Cardinal games, but I'm a little prejudiced. I don't think so. The Cardinal fans are unusual in that they support their team, whether their team is good or terrible. Maybe others do that too, but you can't deny there's something special about Cardinals baseball. The stadium, the atmosphere, the tradition, the history, and the size of the crowd are important factors in making these Major League Baseball games in St. Louis a tremendously enjoyable event. I have to add one more thing to my resume of sporting events I've attended as a fan. If you cross the Mississippi River from St. Louis, Missouri into Illinois, you won't have to go too far before you find a racetrack that has hosted some NASCAR events. I know some of you don't think that's a sport. I realize some of you would never call a race car driver an athlete, but you have to admit racing is still a competition. I've seen one NASCAR truck race and one Nationwide Series race at that track. You ever wonder why someone would attend a race? Well, have you ever heard the sound of a race car at full throttle? Have you ever felt the thunderous roar of numerous race cars screaming around a racetrack at crazy speeds? Do you ever walk up to the fence as the cars go by and feel the wind coming off the cars? It's enough to nearly knock you over. Then if you go up by the wall, you get a tremendous sense of the violent speed at which the vehicles run. Needless to say, I know what it's like to be a sports fan attending a sporting event. I know what it's like to be around drunken fans that have washed their intellect and sense right out of their minds. I know what it's like to listen to loudmouth and obnoxious fans of opposing teams. However, I have never been tempted in a college or professional sporting event to lose control of my behavior. Some might say that means I'm not a true fan. Maybe so. But I will confess, I do know what it is like to fight the temptation to get caught up in the moment and lose perspective on what is most important when my own kids have been involved in sporting events. Whether it's a pro event or your kid's little league game, just remember the fruit of the Spirit. The inspired Word says the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such there is no law. And those who are Christ have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires. If we live in the Spirit, let us also walk in the Spirit. Let us not become conceited, provoking one another, envying one another. Galatians chapter 5, verses 22 to 26. Fan behavior is becoming more excessive and violent at sporting events. Sarah Brown, a Google contributing author, wrote of her terrible experience with violent fans at an NFL game. Many fans responded to her article by telling her that they won't go to the games anymore because of the violent and aggressive behavior of the fans. Brown writes, "Alcohol may not be the primary problem, but it sure is the gasoline on the fire. If these sports venues were bars, they would lose their liquor license for over-serving. Not only that, but the fans are drinking hours before the game." Well, I don't doubt that alcohol makes sports fans' behavior worse, but a lot of fans have simply lost perspective on the proper place of sports in their lives. One way to measure how far out of balance fans have become is to look at the way they treat the players and the players' families. Consider an article written by Grant Wall for CNN.com entitled, "Over the Top." This article describes what happened to Kevin Love in college. Kevin's father, Stan Love, is the sixth leading scorer in Oregon basketball history, so Oregon fans were hoping his talented son would become an Oregon player. Kevin Love chose to attend UCLA instead, angering Oregon fans. When UCLA played against Oregon, Kevin Love received numerous death threats against him and his family. At the game, Kevin's family was pelted with popcorn boxes, cups, and extremely vulgar and filthy insults. Small children were in the stands, holding up vulgar signs with insults directed at Kevin Love. Kevin was able to lead UCLA to victory in that game while scoring 26 points and racking up 18 rebounds, but the attacks on his family were horribly uncalled for. The fanatic behavior of the Oregon fans is clear evidence that the increase in love for sports sometimes, though necessarily, decreases a love for people. We must not put sports over people. We must never forget God even loves those people who play for rival teams. 2 Peter chapter 3 and verse 9. As family members of targeted players feel the need to bring security guards to road games, and with schools such as Oregon and Illinois issuing apologies for the behavior of their fans, it's worth asking, how much is too much? The abuse that fans are bringing day to day, whether it's on talk radio or in the stands, is going to ruin the game eventually, says Michigan State coach Tom Izzo. A news report from the Associated Press began with a statement, "At least three people were stabbed in a parking lot at Sports Authority Stadium Field at Mile High after the Denver Broncos game Thursday night." The short article ended with a reminder of the increasingly violent behavior of sports fans at major events. The stabbing Thursday is just one of several recent incidents involving football fans. Earlier this month, in Kansas City, Missouri, a man died after an altercation in the Arrowhead Stadium parking lot during Kansas City's game against Denver. In September, in San Francisco, a teenage fan suffered a concussion and a broken arm and a nose at Candlestick Park after police say he was attacked during the 49ers game against Indianapolis. Christian fans need to be careful of an addiction to sports. It is just such an addiction that can cause us to lose perspective on the value of people. Eric Simons wrote the book, The Secret Lives of Sports Fans, The Science of Addiction. In that book, he gives the definition of addiction as when people change everything they do for the sake of one passion, when that passion takes over and people lose control of their lives to the point that there are negative consequences, they're considered addicts. This definition certainly fits the way sports has taken over the lives of some individuals. Christians cannot afford to let this happen because it will affect their relationship with God, church, and family. In his book about the science of sports obsession, Eric Simons wrote in his conclusion, "You can choose to temper your sports enthusiasm or to amplify it, but the point is that you can choose." Christians need to choose to keep sports in perspective. 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 18. Paul was persecuted in terrible and painful ways because of his faith in Christ. As he spoke of how he was able to endure such persecution, he wrote, "For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, is working for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory, while we do not look at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporary, but the things which are not seen are eternal." 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 17 and 18. There are at least two things we need to see in this verse that should help us maintain a proper perspective on nearly anything in life, including athletics. First, Paul suffered terribly and was eventually killed for being a Christian. 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 5 through 16. Now, how important do you think sports was to Paul when he was in prison for preaching the gospel? Paul was aware of athletic competition and may even have been something of a fan. In his writings, he uses sports to illustrate Christian life, effort, and discipline, such as in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 24 to 27. But does a person really care about a sporting competition when they've been tortured or sitting in prison and may well be killed within a few days? Talking about this is like throwing cold water in the face of Christians intoxicated with athletics. The second part to 2 Corinthians 4, 17 to 18 that should help us to maintain perspective on sports has to do with what Paul said about his focus. He was focused on the invisible or spiritual. He was not looking at the visible or material. Surely we can enjoy sports without losing all sense, perspective, and focus upon what is really important. Can't we see how ridiculous and foolish it is to be filled with fire, zeal, and devotion to a team while living a lukewarm or dead-cold spiritual life? Revelation chapter 3, verses 15 and 16. Never place your loyalty to a sports team above your loyalty to God. Matthew 6, 33. And never place your devotion to sports above your devotion to your family. Colossians chapter 3, verses 18 to 21. Putting sports in its rightful place in your life will help you with your behavior as a sports fan. Just remember, you won't care who won any game when the Lord returns in judgment. Matthew chapter 25 and verse 46.